Welcome into a special edition of Monday Scramble. We are looking at the best of 2015. And just like a player trying to add a new shot to his repertoire, we are looking to add podcasts to the golfchannel.com ensemble. I've already screwed up, so we're off to a good start. Along with Jay Coffin, Randy Mell, Ryan Lavner, I'm Will Gray.
You know, before we get the show started, yes. Though, is it 2015 or 2015?
I like 2000.
I can't continue. I actually think
it wasn't,
there's an AP stop.
It wasn't
stop.
20 and 9.
No, but it was 2010 and 20. I believe there's actually an AP style on 20 and it's 2015. But carry on.
How annoying is it when your editor edits your conversation?
It's getting up there.
It's going from copy to conversation. Oh, jeez. Yeah. It's a bold new world.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. We're already off the rails 90 seconds into this.
He's going to delete one of us before the show's over, too.
Not it.
It's you.
Oh, not it. Yeah. All right. So whatever year you want to call it, 2015, 2015, it was a big year in golf. A lot of big tournaments, a lot of big winners, Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, Lydia Inby, beat goes on and on. Brian, what's your takeaway?
It's the year of Spieth, obviously. Two majors, five wins, $22 million in earnings.
Decent.
He literally put the game in a chokehold this year, and he's the baby-faced
assassin.
Kid of the sport at 22. It's a remarkable year.
Yeah,
that's the best we've ever seen.
Oh, the major run almost at the British Open, almost making it historic, epic. Yeah, that it could have been the greatest year ever if he'd have been able to pull that one off.
Yeah, that's the main takeaway. But to me, it's good to see that there are so many top stories of the year. I mean, it had been Tiger dominated over the last 20 years, and yeah, you'd have the random Phil and the Vijay and Duval over the last 20 years. But now it is Spieth, but Tiger's still there, not for good reasons. And Day, Lydia, Park. The Solheim Cup. I mean, you go down. There was a lot of stuff to write and talk
and that's,
about.
That shows you how good Spieth's year was because Tiger's year was so traumatic.
Yes,
that he's still not what people are talking about right now. It's still Jordan Spieth.
I also think that it showed once and for all that golf is going to survive Tiger.
Yes, it's good
that
for golf.
The game is fine with Tiger shooting $1.5 million. It's going to be okay.
If we were talking about Tiger being the story of the year, golf might be in trouble right now.
Yeah,
well, it's still up there.
Yeah.
But he's still 1B.
He's a comfortable two.
Imagine being that, a comfortable two handicap. That'd be nice. All right, well, let's go back to the man that Ryan Lavner has adorned as the champion golfer of the year, even though it belongs to Zach Johnson. So it's the year of Spieth. And from five wins, FedEx Cup, Masters, the U.S. Open, chasing the Grand Slam, $22 million, as you alluded to. I mean, it was a year unlike one that we've seen by anyone not named Tiger Woods, and we certainly didn't expect it to come from someone who just turned 22 this summer.
Yeah, I mean, he's basically the youngest ever.
Whatever. Yep, fill in the blank.
Youngest ever anything, or at least in that conversation. If it wasn't Tiger, it's certainly Spieth now. I'm going to go back to St. Andrews, though, because to me that was the most impressive thing that Jordan Spieth did this year. I know he won the Masters by a lot. And
whatever. He won by five.
US Open. Okay. He probably should have lost that one. But
come on.
But the most impressive thing he did was go to St. Andrews with all of that Grand Slam pressure. He had 2.5 days to prepare at St. Andrews for a course that's supposed to have, course knowledge is supposed to be so important. The only time he played it was on his home simulator. And he goes out and shoots a great score in the first round and was tied for the lead with two holes to play, with all that pressure.
But he still didn't win. That can't look. I applaud you trying to go out on a limb. That can't be the most impressive thing that Jordan. The most impressive thing that a 21-year-old young man did can't be flying to Scotland and finishing second. Yeah. That can't be the most impressive. You and I flew to Scotland, got right off the plane, and went and played golf.
We played terrible, but
it was impressive that I was able to get off the plane after flying all night and going to
and
play
stand.
Golf. If I can do it, somebody half my age
can go do it.
So while it was impressive, there ain't no way in hell it was the most impressive
performance
thing that he did
this year.
You're already trying to qualify your own statement. You're going downhill.
Randy, be the voice of reason.
But when were you pressed closest to the television set during golf this year?
On the 71st hole at St. Andrews.
Maybe the 70th hole. But right in there. That was when golf was the most interesting, potentially most magical, because if he wins this thing, oh, man, he has a chance for the Grand Slam, go to the PGA Championship.
And that 40-footer.
Exactly.
Yeah. That was the you-have-got-to-be-kidding-me moment of the year. Even more so than the one that he made before at Chambers Bay, also on 16th.
I may or may not have yelped when that putt went in.
So you did.
Really paint the picture there.
How did that sound, Ryan?
Like a...
That is ironically pretty much what I would have expected from you.
And no offense to Zach Johnson, but it was a little deflating when you realized he couldn't win it. It was a great victory for Zach Johnson, but we all wanted, didn't we all want to go to the PGA Championship looking to see if the guy could pull off?
Well, even the whole playoff was a little anticlimactic.
The whole media horde followed Spieth into the press tent afterward. No one was out watching the playoff.
Yeah.
No offense to Zach Johnson, but at that point, Spieth was still the story.
All right, well, let's dial things back. I know that you love his performance at St. Andrews, but he did kind of win the Masters by like 75 shots, and he hit some ridiculous shots. He finished second the year before. Everyone's thinking, "Ah, it was nice. He'll be contending eventually." But no one really expected him to come out and blow the doors off that field.
Yeah, I mean, that's really just shows you Spieth's ceiling as a player. It was near flawless. He let it go a little bit in the third round. I think one of the best shots of Spieth's year was that flop 18. Shot that he hit on 18, third round. Things started to be getting a little bit out of control. But to be able to hit that flop shot over the bunker onto a downslope to 10 feet and then can the putt for par. Woo.
That's right in the Lavender wheelhouse. I've seen that shot.
That's a shank into the gallery for sure.
Yeah, to have that kind of consistency for that, you know, we've talked about a lot, and not overpower any of these golf courses, right, to not be the bomber. To lead basically wire-to-wire at the Masters and then do what he did at the U.S. Open for those first two and not hit at 320 is even more impressive to me, right? I mean, he's not overpowering. He's not slinging it around trees like Bubba Watson. That's not what he's doing, but he's using strategy and precision and this crazy...
Wedges and putting.
This crazy putting.
It's a different formula for success.
And it's refreshing because we're sort of programmed to know that bombers are going to contend and win these things.
And even at the Masters, you go back, remember, it was wet that week, and you come in with Bubba as the defending champ. You've got Rory looking for the career Grand Slam.
Yeah.
The wet conditions, it seemed like, well, it's going to help everyone except little Jordan Spieth, who can only hit it 295 or whatever, that these guys are going to just whale it, and they're going to carry it over every tree and every corner. And then he comes in and just runs the show from the very beginning.
See, I also find it interesting because with Zach Johnson... That's a similar kind of game. He's a mid-length hitter. He's a good iron player and great wedge and putter. Watching Zach Johnson play, no disrespect to him, just wasn't that exciting. But Spieth, there's an element of surprise to what he's going to do. You don't know if he's going to talk to his golf ball, if he's going to send one out of bounds or hit some kind of squirrely shot and make some heroic putt once again.
Yeah, that's the fun thing, I think, about watching him, because he isn't that power player that awes people, but he is entertaining. He's Palmer-esque in the way that he invites you out there. It's like you're playing alongside him, because he's talking to you. You know, he's talking to his ball, but he's talking to you, too. You feel like
he's talking to himself.
He brings you into a round, and it's very entertaining, and it's nice to have a number one player in the world who's like that. And actually, we look at the top three, and they're all engaging in that way.
We're hashtag blessed, for sure.
Wow. Take it there. That's good. All right, well, moving on now. In terms of more impressive feat, winning the Masters or winning the U.S. Open / being there when Dustin Johnson decided to give the tournament away?
I'd say the Masters for sure.
I think it's the Masters because it's the first, and until you get the first, until you win your first, you just don't know if it's in you. You think it is, but until you do it, it really is a toss-up, though. I mean, I don't feel super passionately about it because I know how much pressure there was at the U.S. Open, at Chambers Bay, at the place where his caddy was the man for all those years. So, I don't think it would have been crazy if he hadn't have won the U.S. Open. So, I still think it's the first, you know, because of what happened a year ago. I think I'm going to have the Masters, but you know, if you tell me it's the U.S. Open, I'm not going to yell at you.
Randy, are you going to tell him it's the U.S. Open?
I would like to just to argue with Jay because it's fun to argue with Jay, but because it's easy to kick his butt in an argument. But no, this one I can't. The Masters, because for the same the reasons I think are when a guy comes that close, there are scars, and when he gets back there, he can want it too badly, and you never know. You think Rory McIlroy. He's going to win one, but we don't know. You know, he shot that 80. He came back determined that one year when he shot the 80, when he had a chance to win it, came back determined. But, you know, he hasn't got himself back in the hunt yet. But Jordan immediately did. He took those scars and turned them into a victory immediately.
Yeah. All right, well, we're going really down the rabbit hole here, but do you think he wins the U.S. Open if he didn't win the Masters 2 months before? Does he need that confidence boost of having the green jacket to be able to hold on down the stretch to make the putts and have that confidence boost?
I say no. Obviously, you know, there's no way of knowing, but I say no. I just the determination on his face on that Sunday, because it wasn't flawless golf on Sunday from Jordan Spieth.
It wasn't flawless golf all week.
Kind of leaked. Yeah, exactly. And I think
if
I just hang in here, you know, other guys are gonna screw this up before me.
I know what it's like to try and win your first major. These guys are going through those emotions. Yeah. I have the upper hand.
Yeah, so while we don't know, I feel pretty confident in thinking that he would not have won that U.S. Open if he didn't pull off the Masters.
So first T4, as Lavender so eloquently pointed out, it was not a runner-up, but a T4 finish at the Open, and then second at the PGA. Where does Spieth's year, and specifically the year in majors, rank all time?
Man,
certainly one of the best ever.
It is.
Is it better than Tiger 2000?
No.
Oh, come on.
No.
Tiger probably is.
Is it better than Tiger 2005?
No.
If Spieth, I think I calculated, if Spieth won the PGA, it would have been better statistically than his other Tiger's two majors. Yeah.
Okay, that's that little word if. That's huge right there. But yeah,
it's
pretty
close. It was a score that would have won one PGA's outright.
Yeah, come on. Right. It's got to be behind Byron Nelson. It's got to be behind when Hogan won three times. What, Tiger's got a couple of years. So I don't know. Is it even
top
five?
I'll
give it a top 10. I don't think I'm ready to give it a top 5.
All right, I think that's probably pretty fair.
And the scary thing is, Will,
he's got some time.
The scary thing is, it's possible that this is the best it's ever going to get for Spieth.
That's true. Yeah.
That's true. You don't really think about that, but at 22, you can peak. Tiger's
you're such
peak
an naysayer. I mean, you're so
statistically, historically.
Correct. That's not going to happen.
Very likely it's never going to get better than this.
I agree.
That's kind of sad.
Yeah.
That kind of makes me sad.
Yeah. Well, at least I feel like you knew it at the time. Like there was no part about this summer that caught you off guard. You were able to soak it all in and be like, holy crap, we are witnessing something that we have never seen before, may never see again for 20 or 30 years. I mean, we were able to live in the moment with him, but you're right, he could be downhill from 22, like a Taylor Swift song.
And now Spieth gets, 3 weeks off where he can try to process what he just went through over the past 50 weeks and kind of game plan for how he could possibly come up with an encore.
How did this go from celebrating Spieth's great year to he's washed up?
Well, this is what we call in the industry a segue, Randy Bell, because now, speaking of washed up, we have Tiger Woods. Because not only was Jordan Spieth on the rise, but this year Tiger was on the decline with a speed the likes of which we have not seen in a good long while. We had yips, we had activated glutes, we had one top 10 at the Wyndham that totally came out of left field, and now we have more back surgeries and arguably the most depressing news conference I've ever seen at the Hero World Championship.
And the weird hand-arm injury that we almost
forgot
about.
Yes, that he fixed himself, which is amazing.
He just popped it back into place.
Yeah, oh, boy.
No biggie.
I mean, who hasn't done that?
Well, maybe at 1 in the morning. We're fine. I'll walk it off, rub some dirt in it. It'll be good. But, you know, eventually you wake up in the morning. Maybe he did. Maybe his hand was hurting the next day. But this was a crazy, surreal year for
Tiger. He had more back surgeries than he had breakups.
And top 10.
Relationships, right?
And top 10.
And top 10.
That's the thing. There are just so many ways to go with Tiger, and none of them are positive.
No.
The only relative positive would be Wyndham, but he played terribly on Sunday and couldn't keep it together for 4 days in a row, which we kind of already knew. So shame
Masters,
on us for knowing that.
The Masters in hindsight, but even at the time, you expected it to be a harbinger of bigger things.
Yeah.
It's only that looking back at the fact that, he really sucked for four straight months, that now maybe that T17 was better than we thought.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. And those yips, it's still, look, whether you like, we know how polarizing he is, and whether you like Tiger Woods or you dislike Tiger Woods, it was hard to watch him skull it all over Phoenix. That was hard to watch. Like, I don't know anybody. I mean, all my buddies just talking, just water cooler talk. Who took great joy in watching this great champion of our lifetime just slap it everywhere? I mean, he was trying to avoid hitting it over bunkers because he couldn't chip it over a bunker. He was going to skull it into the bunker or where. Like, that was hard to watch. And we talked about that Y word. We talked about yips for months on end. And then came back, the Masters did what he did, made us think that, okay, maybe he was completely rid of the yips. And then
we
get back to the Greensboro when he was in contention. The pressure was there. We had some pretty chunky, slappy. We had some nasty little shots. So
Jay Coffin-esque shots. Yeah.
Man,
it
was all over the map for this guy, man. Yeah. I mean, it just was nothing he didn't do this year other than play well.
We saw his body worn down all year long and what's happening there. And you wonder how that affects him mentally, how that wears him down. Because
clearly affected him.
Yeah, we almost sense it in his talk at the Hero World Challenge, where it was the things that we weren't hearing and detecting from him that stood out. It was we weren't hearing the determination, yes, he's going to be back, he's going to challenge Jack's
record.
He's so close.
Yeah.
The Tiger speak buzzwords that we've come to know
and
love.
That's what's sort of bizarre, too, is that, you know, we sort of hammer him, you know, for using those buzzwords, you know, hey, I'm close. It's just about I need more reps.
And you're like,
good God, Tiger, come on. It's not. And then a month later, it's like, I'm a vice captain,
and I'm just rehabbing.
And I want to be a playing assistant. Like,
yeah.
But this has never been about what we believe. It's always been about what he believed. And I think his language, the things he's saying, reveals kind of maybe how what he believes changes.
There's a sense of resignation now.
And there's also been a sense of, it seemed like for so long he was trying to convince himself with a lot of those, you know, try saying it is what it is and all the buzzwords and that I'm close. It's almost like if I say it enough times, it's gonna come true. But you're right, the air was out of the balloon in the Bahamas, and you just sat there, and it's like, holy cow, what has happened to this guy? Because this was the year we came into this year. He had just picked up Chris Como. Everyone knew he's going to turn 40 at the end of the year, and this was the start of one last great charge. Yeah. That he's healthy, he has momentum, he's going to get back to where he was in 2013. And the wheels
absolutely fell. Than we ever could imagine.
Yeah. Doubt and uncertainty, the great enemies of a champion, and the depth of uncertainty at the Hero World Challenge. You know, we've never heard it to that depth.
Well, we're going to take a look now. There was certainly some talk from Tiger at the Hero just about how his career in general has played out to this point. It was interesting to hear.
I think pretty much everything, you know, beyond this will be gravy. You know, I've won, you know, I passed Jack on an all-time, you know, win list. I'm just shy of Sam. I passed Sam basically a decade ago in major championships. But I'm still shy of Jack's. So I've had a pretty good career from my 20s and 30s. For my 20 years out here, I think I've achieved a lot. And if that's at all it entails, then I've had a pretty good run.
So this sounds like a guy who is done. He's willing to just look back at, here is my complete body of work, which is a total 180 from anything we have heard from Tiger, even up until and through this summer.
Yeah, the whole gravy comment, right? Anything more than this is gravy. Tiger Woods, man.
He's basically waving a white flag.
I
think he is. He's basically
signing the white flag,
and
he's framing it.
But
he's
telling us, look, I don't have a clue. He almost sounds relieved in a sense. He said that, you know, the 18 majors wasn't all that it was cracked up to be. Everyone thought that was just his guiding principle in life, but it wasn't about that. I'm not sure I buy that. It sounds like a guy who's trying to change his narrative at the end of the career, make it more about the injuries got him, even though he tried his best. The fact of the matter is, this is a guy who's kind of at peace with what he's done, and if he never does anything else, that's okay, but it's still kind of a guy who's changing his narrative now.
And also a guy who sounds like he's preparing for that next phase of his life. Okay, let's soften my relationship
soften
with the
image.
Media.
Yep.
Let's start opening up a little bit, because Brandel Chambly said he's the most impactful player ever, and I'm repeating this, but he can still be impactful, but to do that, it's going to take, you know, we still going to want to know what Tiger thinks about things. He can still write a book about his career. He can still be a very important person in golf, but it's going to be in a different way, and it's going to be, you know, I think we're almost seeing public relations steps to get to that next
level. To be impactful while not playing, you have to be quasi-likable. You don't have to be lovable or anything, but you have to be. If you're not playing, you're not fist pumping, you're not making birdies, you're not winning majors by 8 shots, and you're not doing any of that, but you still want to be relevant, you got to give, man. There's got to be something in there that you're telling me that I haven't heard before.
We'll have to see what happens from here on out. But a reminder, this is the Best of 2015 podcast. I'm Will Gray, joined by Jay Coffin, Randy Mell, and Ryan Labner. And guys, we entered the year with Rory McIlroy, a clear-cut number one. If I had told you in January, not only is Rory not going to be number one, but he's going to get caught by not one, but two other players, you would have reached into your wallet and seen how much money you could bet me on that. But that is how it is. Jordan Spieth wins five times, Jason Day wins five times, and we now have as close to a big three, I think, as we've seen in a while. I think we're a little too quick trying to go back to that, the Jack, Arnie, Gary, you know, days and try and paint that picture.
Yeah,
and try and paint that picture. But we have a clear-cut top three at the top of the world rankings in Jordan, Jason Day, and Rory McIlroy heading into the next year.
Might be the first time ever that a guy's won four times and he's thought of as chopped liver. Yeah. Right? I mean, he was
the
forgotten.
Race Dubai. Yeah.
He was forgotten during the summer and the fall.
Yeah. Totally.
He was a complete afterthought. Yeah. And that was still a guy who won a WGC event this year at the match play. Yeah. He's still backdoored to top tens at the Masters and the US Open. But that's what happens when you have the emergence of two really compelling guys and also the worst time soccer game in the history of golf.
I think that's a short list.
It is.
Look at it. Worst time soccer game
is one
golf.
For 10.
Yeah, well, it's the number one.
Sergio's probably on there. At
yeah,
some
I'm
point.
Sure he
Sergio,
tweaked
yeah,
something.
Yeah, Sergio had a kick about it at some point, yeah. Maybe after Medina. But it's amazing to see these three. And I feel like the question is always, who's got the highest ceiling? And for me, I'm still saying Rory. That if they're all firing on all cylinders and Rory's not playing soccer, I would take Rory over both Jordan and Jason. But I do not feel as confident about that as I did 10 months ago.
I agree with you. I think I'd still take it. And sadly, I think I'd probably take Spieth. I'd probably make him third.
Yeah, you
is,
might.
Which is,
I
which
think
is
almost clear.
Which is
that because
I think
of the
probably is too. Oh, it's just
what
power.
Jason Day showed.
He has to be perfect.
Yeah,
Spieth has to be absolutely perfect. Just because the other guys are so long
correct.
And they're so deadly with their irons.
Correct. Their extra gear is an extra gear and a half. I mean, we've seen Rory's extra gear, and Rory's extra gear is Tiger-esque. I mean, we've seen it at majors, and you know, I mean, we saw it just a year ago at Royal Liverpool. I mean, when he gets it going, man, it's
a different game.
But Day's not far behind that. I mean, he gets it just as far as Rory. His irons are just as good, and statistically at least, he's a better putter than
Well, Rory. We saw at Whistling Straits, we saw Jason against Jordan, and clearly I think that the Day's extra gear got him to that point where you just never really felt like Jordan Spieth was in the mix there when Jason was playing that final round. But we haven't seen Day against Rory yet, and that's an interesting lineup that hopefully we'll see at some point soon.
But Rory's the greatest driver of the ball in the game. Jason Day can be just as long, but I don't think that Jason's been as consistent. I mean, he can get off the map with his driver. We haven't seen it long enough, but those two at their best, wouldn't that be fun? And Jordan. But the thing about Jordan is he grinds so hard that I don't know that he'll have the highs and lows at those two. Also, he doesn't hit it offline as far as those guys can. So, you know, he'll grind it away in his consistency. He could come out with more wins in a season at his best than those two guys at their best. They'll reel off maybe four in a row or something.
Can he also continue to putt this well?
Yeah, I was going to say. Jordan's eventually going to have a down stretch, whether it's a full season or a couple months. I mean,
he has always been a great putter.
Yeah.
I followed him in junior golf, college golf. He always makes putts when you don't think he's going to.
You feel clear cut he's the best putter
so
of his career?
Oh, by far the best putter, But I would put Day... Day second, and Rory
you put
a distant.
You put Day above Rory?
I would.
In terms of putting?
No.
In terms of putting, we
talked about this before.
He's been a top 30 putter for the last 6 months.
No, but if you're talking about guys, and I know we've had this discussion before, of guys, if you have an 8-foot putt for the money, Jason Day was like 17th on my list of people that I would want to putt that
putt. Not anymore.
Well, he's gotten better.
Jason Day may be a better putter than he used to be. I still want Rory over putts that you have to make.
Yes.
And there's a big difference right there. Jordan and Rory. 9 and 10 times out of 10, I'm taking them over Jason Day when we're standing over an 8 to 10 footer that you have to make.
Jason Day, maybe in the regular.
He
has belief, but he still has that scar tissue. He has missed so many of those putts when it mattered, whether it's the U.S. Open in Marion, whether it's that Masters in 2013 that he probably spit the bit on when Adam Scott won.
The PGA last year at Valhalla.
Yeah.
He missed everything.
He has missed a ton of putts that we have not seen Rory and Jordan miss when it really mattered. When there's 2, 3, 4 holes left in a tournament that they want, you don't see them miss those putts. And you see Jason Day miss them, or you used to. Now, could it be different?
This
now,
is the turning point in Day's career.
That's fine, but I can't project that just off of this. You know, it was a great stretch, but I've seen much more, have a larger sample size from Rory and Jordan that makes me believe that I can trust them when it matters.
Yeah. That's fair. I think that putt in Canada for Day was really the turning
big
point
deal.
For him.
Yeah.
In terms of clutchness.
Yeah. I agree. Clutchness. I think that is that, are we good with that? What's the AP style on clutchness?
Fine.
We're going hyphenated?
You can use it in a story, probably.
Have you?
Maybe edit it out.
Clutchness.
I don't know that we want to go down
there's
the
no
rabbit
statistic for clutchness.
Well, maybe there should be.
But Jordan Spieth would be number one.
Jordan Spieth.
Yes, he would. Right,
they will. When they invent it, they'll just put Jordan Spieth number one.
Then they'll everybody else will flow by.
Then they'll fill out the rest. Yeah. We won't talk about who's going to be about 168th on that. But anyway, enough about the PGA. Plenty to talk about on the LPGA as well. We had Jordan and Jason winning for the guys. You had Inbi and Lydia winning for the ladies. Five wins apiece, neck and neck, Randy, in that final stretch into that last event for who's going to win the Vera Trophy for the scoring average, who's going to be player of the year, who's going to win the CME Race to the Globe. They ended up pretty much splitting all the hardware, but it was a compelling year from the two of them at the top.
It did, and it came down to almost the last shot struck. Lydia Ko walked off the final green at the CME Tour Championship in the last event crying. You never see her cry because really she thought she had blown it. She thought she had blown her chance for the CME Globe, for the Rolex Player of the Year, and you know, she just barely edged out Inbi for those. Inbi gets the Vera Trophy. So, you know, they all came away with those two who separated themselves all year. It was a satisfying finish
for
them.
She was crying because she knew she was going to have to face Randy Mell and all those tough, hard-hitting, biting questions. I was like, oh, man.
Randy's wagging his finger at the scoring team.
Is that because I said you were easy to beat in the argument?
You're paying that one off for a while there, Randy.
Yeah, my paycheck's going to be a little lower.
No, I think it's good that, you know, we talked about this earlier, that they are sort of a package deal right now. I mean, you'd like to see Stacey Lewis or somebody else sort of jump up there and
have
the LPGA have their big three of sorts. But right now, it's those two. And on any given week, it's all about them all the time.
You look at how many top tens they had. If you didn't look at a leaderboard and see their name, you wanted to put out an APB for, where's Lydia Ko? Where's Inbi Park? Yeah. They're missing somewhere.
But you're right. I mean, Stacey Lewis, I feel like she finished second once again while we've been taping this podcast. But, I mean, so many runner-ups still can't get over the hump.
She's the Henrik Stenson of women's golf. They had identical years.
Look at you.
They had nine top three finishes. They both did.
Somebody's
doing a little bit of better research.
How about that?
I did want to ask you, Randy, sorry to jump in here, about the state of Americans. We talk about Cohen and Park, but after that, just the Americans in general, it was not, I mean, yeah, the Solheim Cup was terrific for American women's golf. But other than that, not really anything to speak of for the American women, is there?
Well, you had Brittany Lincecum win the first major of the year. We all know Brittany goes hot and cold, and she likes her fishing time and things like that. But, you know, you look at the Americans, it's been Stacey Lewis carrying the banner for a while, but Lexi Thompson, she's right there. It's not that Lexi has a bad short game. She does not have a bad short game, but her short game doesn't compare to the top three in the world. Inbi, Stacey, and Lydia, they all have excellent short games. And if Lexi's going to challenge them, that'll be where she makes a difference. Because Lexi's ball striking, Stacey Lewis said that if Lexi was a great putter, nobody would beat her. I mean, Lexi led the tour in greens and regulation. She's right there. She's 20 years old. Are you born a putter or not? If she can make herself...
You're born a putter.
She's not a bad putter.
She's not a putter.
But, you know...
She uses the glove.
That's true.
Can't be a good putter. You're still using your glove.
Christy Kerr showed us at 38. She isn't done. But we have Allison Lee, I think, another American to maybe watch. She made the Solheim Cup team. If she can keep progressing.
Randy, I want to ask you this. This is like Ask Randy. Same with the LPGA.
We need some theme music here.
How sold are you on Lydia Ko being a dominant player? To me, it seems like the LPGA is just waiting for a player who has the length of Lexi and the short game of Inbi to come along, and that player's going to sweep up a bunch of titles. Inbi and Lydia Ko, great players, obviously, but they're ruthlessly efficient. They're they're medium length hitters. They're very good with their ball striking, very good putters. How long do you see her dominance lasting?
That's the longest question ever, by the way. Go ahead.
Well, journalism 101 right there.
Just keep talking.
Asking questions.
Well, it was controversial when Lydia left her longtime coach in New Zealand and went to David Ledbetter. And one of the things she wanted was more distance when she went to David. And her mother, Tina, when she first met with David Ledbetter and Sean Hogan, who works also with David and Lydia, she wanted to turn her fade into a draw to get more distance. And they did exactly that. Now, how great an accomplishment is that? How many players have we heard try to do something like that and completely lose it? Yeah, and she did get
Martin
more
power. Yeah, I was going to say, Martin Kammer took him 3 years to get off that.
She did. She got more power. And in talking to Lydia after she won the CME end of this season, she thinks, she believes that she can still get more distance. So Lydia is an above average player in distance, but she's not a power player. And Inbeat's basically the same, but I think you could see Lydia get another 10 more yards just in, she's 18 years old. She's still growing, getting stronger. She's working out. She's working on the swing. So as far as dominance, the candle that burns twice as bright burns half as long. I think that's Lydia's deal, because she says she's going to retire at 30, so she's going to be giving it everything. And, you know, we might not see her. We might see her leave the game early like Lorena Ochoa. So can she dominate? I think she can dominate for 5-6 years. But as long as Inbee's around, it's going to be really tough.
Are you going to lead the Randy Mel memoirs with that candle analogy? Is that just going to be kind of
I stole that.
It's poor among friends.
It's going to be on his tombstone.
All right, so... You were just Debbie Downer here.
I like that.
Why would you?
We talked LPGA for a few minutes here. We haven't gotten to the biggest storyline of the LPGA year, and that has to be Gimme Gate and the Solheim Cup in Germany, the putt, the concession that wasn't, and all the aftermath that followed, both for Allison Lee, Suzanne Pedersen, the U.S. having that stirring comeback in Germany, and pretty much just everything mushroom clouded from there, from that one putt.
Yeah, nobody wants to go for my phantom concession. It's Gimme Gate. I wanted it to be the phantom concession.
No, we're going Gimme Gate. That, everything has to be a gate, Randy. I don't know how plugged in you are to that memo. But
trying to be original here.
Lavender Gate will be coming in 2016. You just wait. Yeah.
Well, it was fascinating. That whole thing, Jay and I were in there, and it was just fascinating, wasn't it, Jay? The way things unfolded. Jay called it the perfect storm, because it was. It was Allison scooping up her ball. Charlie Hull is walking away, she's doing that. Suzanne Pedersen is on the far side of the green, so you can't see her. The referee, as Allison's scooping up her ball, is saying the hole is halved. You know, so you really believed that somehow Allison, even unintentionally, may have been duped the way all these things came together. And I think it's also fascinating when you look at Suzanne Pedersen believes that she was completely within the rules. She did not break the rules, and yet she was guilty of a breach of etiquette so egregious it threatened her reputation, that, you know, she had violated sportsmanship being within the rules. And it was a fascinating debate.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that she did nothing wrong, yet she apologized but couldn't apologize for what she did wrong, because she didn't do anything wrong. That's can I repeat that for you? I'd rather not. But no, that's sort of what you talk about, that perfect storm is it was. I mean, you couldn't write that. If you were writing a book, you couldn't write and position everybody exactly where they were and all that stuff. You had the bully, you had a couple of young softies out there. I mean, you sort of had a little bit of everything, and you're right. Suzanne was absolutely vilified for technically not doing anything wrong. Apologized, but couldn't say what she apologized for, and that made everybody else involved even more mad, because she wouldn't say what she was sorry for.
Yeah, I'm not sorry for what I did. I'm sorry for how you feel about what I did.
She apologized a day late.
Correct.
After she was so vehemently defending her actions.
Well, that was the thing that really got me.
Crisis management.
After the team, the captain, and after Charlie Hull said, "Hey, this is what happened," and Karin Koch, everybody was behind her 100%. The next morning, it was. I checked my Twitter feed. After I told you last night that I would do it all over again, I saw my Twitter feed and saw I might not be let back into my country again if I don't apologize.
It completely reeked of a PR or an outside influence.
But you know what? It was awesome. It was the best thing that happened to that tour and that event.
And
for anyone
is great for
not named Suzanne Pedersen. For anyone not named Suzanne Pedersen, it was terrific.
Do you think that this will be her calling card that 10 years from now when you mentioned Suzanne Pedersen, this is what you think about? You don't think about major champion. You don't think about Solheim Cup stalwart. You think about the putt.
Well, golf is careers are built on people escaping from difficult spots in golf. Sebi Ballesteros was the master of escaping from tough lies. She's in a tough lie, and I think she can. There is some on tour people, players wondering, you know, does she feel like this is something that happened to her, or is she genuinely sorry that it happened? And she made a pledge in her apology that she was going to be an ambassador for the game, that the integrity of the game meant more for her. Well, those words are going to hang there. People will watch to see, does she mean it? Is she going to be an ambassador? And will these other things, will she show that they do really matter to her sportsmanship? And I think she's trying. And it's a difficult spot she's in.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely a difficult spot. We'll have to see. But I think that still, if 2 years from now, when you say Suzanne Pedersen, it's going to be like word association. Suzanne Pedersen, Gimme Gate, or Randy for you, Suzanne Pedersen, Phantom Concession. I'm trying to help you out. I'm trying to build it up. Get a
will she
SEO
be a captain? She's destined to be
a
captain.
That's a slam dunk. Mm-hmm. But then again, that Anika was a slam dunk captain. That,
and when she's a captain, happen. Randall Mell will be there front and center and saying, oh, by the way, Suzanne, do you remember that rainy day, that little day in Germany there? Do you? Let's go back over
that.
Your
thoughts on foot and a half length putts.
Right.
Good or not.
Yeah, very much. All right, well, let's shift now. Let's talk superlatives because, you know, it's fun to talk about that at the end of the year. So we're going to start out with breakout stars from 2015. Ryan, I'll start with you. When I say breakout stars this year, who's on your list?
How many am I limited to here?
Yeah. Give me two.
And what is a breakout star?
That's up to you, Jay.
Yeah, I mean, you have different categories of breakout star. I would say Jason Day and Ricky Fowler went to the next level. I'd say Matt Fitzpatrick kind of disappeared after his U.S. amateur victory. Now he's probably going to be on the European Ryder Cup team. It looks like the next coming of Luke Donald. Kevin Kisner is really the one. He made the biggest jump into the top 20 in the world. He's the top, I think he's 17th now in the world ranking. He's probably in contention now, at least in certain major championships and Ryder Cup teams. I think Kevin Kisner is one who, at age 31, really elevated himself this year.
Yeah. For me, I'm looking at it at from the top 50 metric. I feel like that's the understood rule of if you're in the top 50, you're a good world-class player. You're in the Masters. You're in the WGC events. You're in the majors, and so when we're talking about breakout stars and then disappointments later, it's guys who moved in and guys who moved out. So for me, like you said, Kisner started at 236 this year. Now he's up into the top 20. Andy Sullivan is a guy who you couldn't have picked him out of a lineup a year ago. He wins three times. Jay, you still might not be able to pick him out of a lineup, but that's okay. A sneaky
good. He's more with a beard.
Not anymore. He's a sneaky good interviewer, by the way. Very funny guy. But he started out at 150 this year. He wins three times. He's in the top 50 going to the Masters. David Lingmerth, this is a guy, he almost won that Players with Tiger and then lost his card. Had to go back to the Web.com Tour Finals to get his card back. He wins the Memorial, holds off Justin Rose in a playoff. Those are some guys that made a big leap.
Well, but see, that's why when we talk about the definition, a breakout star to me can't be a guy that I can't pick out of the lineup.
Okay.
He
still hasn't broken out in your opinion.
It can't be.
A high standard of coffin photo analysis.
That's why I asked the question. I mean, it can't be.
There's certain categories of breakout.
Is there?
Yeah, sure. Of course there is.
Breakout? Breakout? Isn't a breakout star?
It says major, star. Jason Day.
It says
breakout
star.
It doesn't say breakout star. It doesn't say breakout schmoes of 2015.
I don't have the rules.
Jay, by all
breakout star.
Who's a breakout player?
Yes. Now that we've spent 90 minutes.
Ricky Fowler. Okay. Ricky Fowler. Ricky Fowler. You know what?
I mentioned him second.
You know what's great? It really is Jordan Spieth. Yeah. I mean, talking about a breakout star, I know it seems stupid, but it was. He broke out and won two majors, and we're talking about a Grand Slam at the home of golf. That's kind of a breakout because there is no way on this planet that anybody, including him, expected that to happen.
Randy, wouldn't you say Lydia Ko for breakout star?
I'm still trying to think of who's the breakout schmo. That's a breakout
it
star.
It might be Andy
But I'll give you the Kisner thing. I'll give you the Kisner thing. I, yeah. I'm picking out of a lineup.
That was, 200 spots.
Terrific, absolutely. Yeah. But
okay, you know, I have to represent the women here, you guys.
Ladies, man.
Overlooking them. Se-young Kim. Se-young Kim in women's golf.
Yep. Brooke Henderson?
I'm not.
Been following her career since she was in diapers. Oh,
absolutely.
Which was only 2 years ago.
He won't let me finish. He just presumes.
Can you imagine what it's like being married to this guy?
I don't want to think about that. You really ruined my day, this show here. But, yes, Brooke Henderson. But Se Young won three times. She was the Rookie of the Year. But what Brooke Henderson did was remarkable, too. If you would have told me at the start of the year that this player would, with no status, who's 17 years old, will earn her card by playing sponsor exemptions and Monday qualifying, that's pretty remarkable. She did it, and she won at 17 years old.
All right, enough of this cheery stuff. I'm going back to Ladner because we're getting back to the depressing part.
Finally.
There you go.
You
right.
To go first,
this
time?
Is in your wheelhouse. You want to go first in this?
No,
this could suit you too.
I don't care.
Okay, throw it out to either one of you, including Randy. Biggest disappointment.
Dustin Johnson.
Wow.
It might be the moment that I remember the most, the entire year. And Jordan Spieth did crazy things.
So not Tiger, not Phil, not anyone else.
No, as far as first to me. It's that three putt. It's the miss putt. To me, that is almost the moment, the single moment of the year.
I agree.
It's a big deal. The other disappointments, obviously. I mean, Tiger Woods. That's going to be a it's a disappointment just because he's sort of in the state that he's in.
Right.
So those are really, I mean, to me, those are the obvious one. Disappointment that Rory McIlroy cheated us all out of the fact that we didn't get to watch him play the Open at St. Andrews. I'm wildly disappointed in Rory.
I think Phil Mickelson needs to thank his lucky stars that we have Tiger Woods and Jordan Spieth to take the brunt of the coverage and discussion, because he has not won in almost 2.5 years,
hugely,
and it's not really being talked about.
Yep.
He's pretty good at that Masters. I would say that Dustin Johnson was the biggest disappointment. I think a couple of the other guys you mentioned, too. Dustin Johnson, you have to remember, he came back from that six-month hiatus. He talked about how he's a changed person, a changed player. He's going to focus on golf. And, yeah, he is a little bit kinder and gentler, but he showed at Doral really what he's capable of, just completely bombing that golf course to death. He came to that U.S. Open, and it actually felt like it was going to be his time, and then he reverted to the exact same player who gets overcome by the moment and choked once again, just adding to his long list of major
meltdowns. And 3 weeks later,
he fooled us again.
We bought it after we were like,
baby, I've changed.
He's going to overpower this place. It's rainy around here. He's going to bomb it all over the place, and then...
Yep. Big disappointment.
Yep.
We got sound effects from Jake Offen, too. That was pretty good. Can I weigh in real quick?
Go.
I'm going to go with Tiger, and it's more a disappointment, I think, for all of us, because I really wanted to see that historic run at Jack. I remember as a kid, you guys are way too young, watching Hank Aaron with Babe Ruth, and I was about a foot from the TV set when Hank Aaron hit the home run in Atlanta to tie or break the world. And it was so historic, so thrilling to watch him make that chase. And to think about Tiger chasing Jack, to think if he got to 17, imagine the excitement in the game. I mean, everybody would be watching. It wouldn't matter if you didn't even hear about golf. You would hear about it. It would be incredible.
I would even settle for like a generational battle between Spieth and Rory versus Tiger.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem like we're going to get that.
Yeah.
I would agree. No. A couple others real quick that I want to throw in just because I get to do it as the host. Billy Horschel, defending FedEx Cup champion, puts up two top tens and 28 starts. That's not really going to pay the bills, but he's got $10 million
FedEx
in the bank.
FedEx Cup fatigue.
Yeah.
And the English golf, changing the guard. Lee Westwood, Luke Donald, Ian Poulter, all three outside the top 50 in the world right now. We saw from Graham McDowell this year what a big difference that can make when you're not in the top 50, you're not in those big events.
Mm-hmm. That Ryder Cup team in 2016 is going to look much different on the European side.
Super interesting.
All right, shifting focus now. Jay, I'll start with you because you complained. Memorable events. What's your most memorable event?
The most memorable event was the Players' Championship.
Memorable moment was from the U.S. Open, but memorable event.
Yes, because the way Ricky finished right there, I mean, it was, to me, that was the single best golf tournament of the year.
I agree.
To me, it was riveting. Everything about it was riveting. You know, I mean, Sergio, I mean, you just everything was about it. I mean, just those three
was
guys there at the end was...
until the last 2 hours?
It was... I mean, anytime you... Like, Sergio,
no,
I feel like, is getting...
No, but you know what? That, to me, carried... It basically carried everything.
Overshadowed.
The last 2 hours, honestly, are really all that matters.
By far the best 2 hours of the year.
But that's really the only thing that matters. The last 2 hours of any golf tournament really are the only thing that matters.
Not so. That's why the U.S. Open was the best tournament.
I always harken back to the 2013 Masters, which was a snooze fest for 3.5 days.
Until
Angel Cabrera starts putting a couple in the water, and then it's all of a sudden an all-timer master. So that, I would say, Lavner, is how you kind of pivot and say, all right, I got a snoozer, and now it's a great event.
Yeah, but the U.S. Open was great from Monday to Sunday.
It was guys yelling at each other about the course.
Yes, that was highly entertaining. The setup was a disaster. The golf course was something like we've never seen for a U.S. Open. Mike Davis was far too prominent. Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, Patrick Reed was up there, Dustin Johnson. I mean, what more do you want from a leaderboard? It came right down to the 72nd hole. That was the best tournament of the year.
And it wouldn't be if Brandon Graves doesn't park one into Puget Sound on the 16th
hole.
That
only added to the great drama.
I'm just saying, we were pretty close to having a Brandon Graves U.S. Open that you would not want to.
Now, there's a
about.
Potential breakout star.
Potential.
Yeah. Randy?
On the women's side, you'd have to go with the Solheim Cup, but most people in the States were sleeping when this happened. But you think about... Just the team events in general, to me, are the most exciting events. The Ryder Cup, there's nothing like it. The Masters is, you know, those would be the two favorite events to cover. But those team events where you have, and it's match play, and you have winning and losing, not just at the end of the tournament, but every hole, you know, in matches. And the way that's set up with the huge controversy before the singles even started, and then the Americans to use that to rally with this incredible comeback, it was a pretty gripping, exciting day if you were up and following it.
Yeah. Jay, when we're talking moments, I think I agree with you that DJ missing the putt at Chambers Bay was the moment of the year, just period. But what else is in contention? What are some other big moments?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. You also, you know, I'm big on like define a moment. So it's still, is it Spieth winning the Masters, or is it him winning the U.S. Open after winning the Masters, or is it him just missing out at the Open? You know, I mean, you, when you're talking about moments of the year, and the year of what Spieth did, what he did, it legitimately has to be him. I'm going to remember DJ because of that single moment. That was the moment of the year. That's what I'm going to remember. But what was Spieth's number one moment of the year?
For me, it was the Open Championship, and it's him in the Valley of Sin missing that putt. And when you exhale and you realize it's over.
I think I agree, but it sort of does disservice.
The 16th hole, when he jarred that putt.
But he didn't win the tournament, though. If he wins that tournament like he did at Chambers, the Spieth moment from the U.S. Open was him making the putt.
Yeah, but do people remember that he didn't win the tournament, or people remember that he gave himself a damn good chance to win the third?
I think it gets washed away. I think it's, wow, he made a really good putt. He's a good golfer that made a good putt. I don't think that is the defining moment for him from that tournament.
Yeah, it seems like a moment has to be decisive in some way. But I agree, man. I don't think anybody pulled closer to the television set than that moment. Like, wow.
Yeah.
Something really special is about to happen here.
Yeah, I would agree. Biggest revelation, Randy, I'll get back to you. When you look back at 2015.
I think it's the Tiger Woods resignation that it may be over. And it was almost stunning to all of us to hear, because you look at and it might not be over, maybe it isn't over, but just this resignation with him that he's coming to terms that maybe it is over, it is the revelation of the year.
Yeah, to me, that's it. It's that Tiger's done.
You emphatically D-U-N-W.
I'm not happy about it, man, but I really do.
Yeah.
He sure as heck ain't catching Jack, and he's not catching Snead, and that is a bit of a bummer. But the other one sort of closes that golf is in much better hands going forward than we ever believed 8 months ago.
Yeah.
In the end of March, from then till right now, this game is in much better hands than we ever believed in the post-Tiger era, pretty close.
So many times this year, and especially this summer, you saw guys, and especially with Spieth, but others, that you expected them to perform at a high level, and again they did. They're always there, always contending. The upper echelon performed better this year than perhaps it has in many of the years past. I think it got watered down a little bit in the Tiger era. He was playing so well and on such a different level. But you saw 5, 6, 8, 10 different players just really ratchet their game up and play well week in and week out.
Yeah, I wrote Tiger is toast for my biggest revelation, just considering where we were in 2013 and 14. I think that the maybe 1B of biggest takeaways this year was that the youth movement is bigger, stronger, deeper than really we could have anticipate. It's only going to make it harder for a player to separate themselves the way Spieth did this year, because when you're jockeying for these titles now, you have all of these young, fearless players who are going to make a lot of birdies. They're all going to hit it 330 off the tee. They're all going to be really aggressive with their iron shots. That kind of mentality is so pervasive down the PGA Tour, it's just going to make it really hard to win.
The fear is gone. I think that we can all agree with that. We no longer have this generation that grows up and expects to, you know, learn on the fly.
Their dues.
Yeah, they show up, and if I'm allowed to tee it up in this tournament, I'm going to beat you. Mm-hmm. And that mindset has changed. We've seen it not only with Spieth, but guys like Justin Thomas and Smiley Coffin and Emiliano Grillo, all that stuff.
And not only that, Lav, you talk about how hard, you know, it's going to be hard for them to all beat each other when they're all playing it. You're still going to have the random Adam Scott, Justin
Zach
Rose.
Johnson.
You're gonna have the random 30-year-old who is over the hill in this day and age. You're gonna have that random catch lightning in a bottle and jump up and win quite a bit of these tournaments on a year in and year out basis.
Indeed. Well, things seem to be in a very good spot. It's been an incredible year. We've all put up with Ryan Lavin for 12 months, so we should pat ourselves on the back for that. But
I just hope I'm still around in 12 months to do this again.
I'll let you know.
Randy's looking at me all sinister.
We'll have to see. Tune in next year. See if Lavender's still here. But thanks for joining us for this podcast at the best of 2015 was a great year for Ryan Lavner, Randall Mell, Jay Coffin. I'm Will Gray. We'll see you next time.